Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Wolves, where I'm considering changing the intro to Locked On Timberwolves. I know that technically isn't the name, but I like saying Timberwolves a little better.
Really?
I feel as though the organization and its fans have gone away from calling them the Timberwolves or the T-Wolves, and it's now just Wolves, like the ESPN. Bottom line just says Wolves. You heard him, Tom Schreier, frequent contributor to this program, co-founder of Cold Omaha, covers the Twins and the Wolves, or the Timberwolves, depending on what you want to call them. Does a, you know, jack-of-all-trades guy. Was watching the Wolves' victory over the Orlando Magic play out last night while I was tending to some other business that I am contractually obligated to fulfill.
Yep.
As part of my employment. You are listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast. As I mentioned, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The Wolves win last night in not very dramatic fashion, but hey, it was the most exciting way to win, I guess. 123-107, the victory over the Orlando Magic. How did it look on the television screen? I'm watching the replay right now. I just got through to halftime. I saw bits and pieces of the second half, but
yeah,
the ball movement was stellar.
It still stagnates though occasionally when they're looking to score, and I think this is the one thing that some of those young players, I love that LaVine's kind of irrational confidence will just jack up shots even when it doesn't really make sense, and certainly last night he looked completely justified in doing so. But I do notice that they still occasionally, when they're looking to get a basket, and this is more probably in Tuesday's game than last night, but the ball was stagnant. But yeah, it was much better yesterday. I think that's a big part. A big part of that is Ricky Rubio, right? Not having him, a guy who's known less as a shooter, more for passing and kind of his wizardry there. But I think this team at the very least trusts each other. And I did notice moments, especially when the offense is clicking on all cylinders, that they're passing up good shots to get great shots. And that's obviously every coach pretty much at every level asks their players to do that. But it's fun to see in practice. And they don't appear to have any big weak links, which makes the third quarter kind of doldrums really confusing, right? You always go, well, you know, who's kind of holding the team back? I really can't point a finger yet. You know, that Wiggins is scoring, Towns is doing Towns things, Levine's been on fire, even guys like Jang and Tyus and Dunn holding down the point guard position, they've done a good job so far.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Zach LaVine scores, ties a career high with 37 points, makes 7 of his 9 3-point attempts. Just excellent play overall offensively. I don't know. I didn't see any stagnation in while my review happens, but
yeah,
in different games this season, definitely so far, especially when Chris Dunn is on the floor. What was I going to say? A lot of the, because now that you mentioned the third quarter thing, which I do also, or I do agree with you, it's almost unquantifiable. Why are they struggling in the third quarter? Well, I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, and especially coming out of, you know, we always talk about Thibodeau, his understanding of the game, how he spent the whole offseason go to various different teams trying to figure out what they do. It's kind of funny that, like, you always think the third quarter actually well-coached teams would come out and just pound someone. And maybe it's just, you know, kind of you let up on the gas a little bit. Maybe they're young players. There's 100 different theories going around. It might also be that the other coach has more to adjust to, right? I think sometimes it's a little bit hard when you just dominate a team for two quarters. I mean, last night, what was it, 39 points in the first quarter? And then 74? I mean, when we went to half, I was like, it was weird in my brain. I was thinking, like, no way this is actually halftime. They have 74 points right now.
Yeah.
But
39 in the first quarter, 35 in the second.
But you would think, I mean, last night, Frank Vogel, I think he's a really good coach. If I was Indiana, I probably would have held on to him. But
Larry Bird disagrees.
Yeah, Larry Bird has more clout in the basketball world than I do. I'm like, yeah, you know what? If you have a really, really good coach, well-coached team, even though, look, it was 74, what? Was it 74-47 at half? I mean, they were just pounding them. Frank Vogel probably has more to work with than Tom Thibodeau does to make adjustments. And it's possible that they're coming out with a really good game plan and stifling them for a little bit. And I think they've figured out, at least early in the season, and remember, they're 2-5. This is not devastating. This is not football where a 2-5 record means a whole lot. But... I don't know. I think that at least early on, they're like, look, if you start to stifle the Wolves, then one guy tries to take over the game and LaVine will put up bad shots and maybe Wiggins feels the pressure to get the offense moving. And, you know, there's ways to take Towns out if the ball's in those guys' hands. So I don't know.
Part of how we perceive the third quarter struggles too, although statistically, and you know, the proof is in the pudding, they've struggled during the third quarter, during first halves of games, the Wolves are just so good. I mean, they're scoring 126.6 points per 100 possessions in the first half of games this season through seven contests. It's the highest number in the league by a good margin, by seven points. They have the highest net rating of any team in the league during the first half, +23. You know, the assist to turnover ratio is ranked first in the league, so. Comparing how poorly they play in the third quarter relative to how well they play during the first half, it's night and day. So how we see them in the third quarter, and you know, while they really struggle, well, it might have something to do with, wow, they really played a really impressive first half of basketball.
Yeah, no, perception's a big part, and I don't think it's just us, you know, on TV, watching on TV or in the stands. I think it's also probably the players, right? Everything looks like it's going well. And maybe there's some frustration when a team figures you out and you go, well, how do we go from literally rolling over these teams that honestly I felt like, and I think this is how the year's going to pan out. I think they're going to lose pretty convincingly to teams that are better than them, like Oklahoma City, and they will crush teams that are worse than them. Like it's just, there's another step to take, of course, but so far, they've kind of, I kind of look and I kind of shake my head, but yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. And again, this is maybe a learning curve for Tom Thibodeau. He's got to deal with a lot of young players who, I think they're a good team. It's not like it's a whole bunch of individuals on that team who are looking to get their own stats, but
he's basically starting from scratch and implementing his defensive system, and it is not easy.
Yeah, and I looked at that Brooklyn game actually as kind of more an anomaly because I was like, that's actually a game where they played pretty well in the third quarter, if I remember well. Again,
yeah,
it stagnated a little bit, but that's expected. They just didn't play good defense. Like how Brooklyn was playing with that Hamilton guy who was on the Wolves for a while.
Yeah.
And what was it, Kilpatrick or Kirkpatrick?
Another member of the Tankathon Wolves team.
Right. And I was like, how is this team scoring on a Thibodeau defense?
No, we... Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you talked about this yesterday.
Arif Hasan was sitting in the studio for that,
yeah,
before the Brooklyn game, and I sort of just scoffed at the notion that Brooklyn would even compete. And as it turns out, Brook Lopez is hitting threes, and I thought Brooklyn played spirited basketball, and you know, they deserved to win that game the way that they played, as poorly as they were. I talked about it yesterday too. It took a little while before Tibbs went to Shabazz Muhammad at the small ball four because Justin Hamilton was. He was hard to defend for Gorgie, and he wasn't going down low or attacking the paint. He was just sitting outside the three-point arc, and Gorgie was having a hard time getting around screens and getting out to him. So he put Baz on him. Baz was the first substitution in the game yesterday, too, he and Tyus Jones. So Bielitsa sort of lost his spot right there in the first rotation for now.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on with Brandon Rush. These healthy DNPs are perplexing, being that all of his teammates have said he always seems to be in the right place at the right time. I know he's not shooting well, but where's Brandon Rush? What is going on here?
Their bench is curious. I think Shabazz is doing what he needs to do. And going back to last time I was on the show, you were saying you thought LaVine could solidify himself in the starting rotation.
I think he did, and you have been bullish.
Yes. Yes, and that's the direction I'm going in. So that means Shabazz actually...
It's here. It has happened.
No, and I think he'll have games still where you'll shake your head, but that's a little bit just his gameplay, right? I mean, his gameplay is predicated on momentum. And I think as soon as he gets going, you can't stop him, but he can also kind of step on his own feet occasionally. Shabazz, I think, is doing what he needs to do off the bench. I think he needs to establish himself as a sixth man and say, pay me, right? You know, get me under contract. I want to be part of the solution. Otherwise, you know, again, another team will roll the dice with him. And I think Bjelica will find his niche. Brandon Rush played really odd to me. And this is just in kind of the opener that I watched, you know, live covering the game. And a few games early in the season I've seen where I was surprised how much he was putting the ball on the floor. And you probably have a better mind for this, or maybe see it a little bit different, but I thought his role was more catch and shoot. And
that's what it was with Golden State, but that's totally a different ball game you're playing.
Yeah, this team is at its best when the ball is on fire. Yeah. And by that, I mean the ball is moving a lot. And so why is he putting on the floor?
The second unit is, I'm going to give him some time and some leeway before I become too critical, just because they were thrown out of sorts when the Rubio injury happened and Dunn moved. And now Tyus is playing a lot with the starters. We'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But, you know, that sort of threw things into flux. I mean, when you spend all of the time during training camp prepping as a five-man group and then you just lose that right away at the beginning of the season, and now all of a sudden you are in the midst of all of these in-game repetitions where you're going against second units with chemistry.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
You know what? Just pausing real briefly, I think the Rubio injury maybe is beneficial for the Wolves as a whole in this sense.
Long term.
Because Thibodeau realizes what... Sometimes you don't know what you have until it's gone. And I know that Rubio is a polarizing figure. There's people that think he's too small, doesn't shoot well, you know, whatever. I think the Rubio crowd now is standing up and shouting, well, don't you want him now? Chris Dunn has done well. I think compared to, certainly, I mean, that first preseason game you were at, we were talking back and forth, and you're like, this dude's not, at least he's not shooting well, shooting like an NBA player. He's fixed some of that. He's moving the ball. He doesn't seem like this selfish guy who wants to be the star.
No, and he's never seemed like that guy.
Right. I'm a huge Chris Dunn fan, but I think you need Ricky Rubio right now. Again, is he on the team in 4 or 5 years? I don't know. But as of right now, I think maybe this is a little bit of a lesson. And as much as I think Chris Dunn is more of a Tom Thibodeau guy, they need him, right? And that second unit should improve because Dunn has now been forced in the fire. Exactly what he said during media day, by the way, is the best way for him to learn.
Yeah, Dunn is... He's been frustrating to watch. He's shooting 36%, 12 of 33 from the field on the season, 7 of 14 from the free throw line, which is a red flag. And you're only making 50% of your free throws.
Yeah.
Defensively, he's a strong player. I think that's a lot of the reason why he starts helps get the Wolves to a strong start defensively, much like the reason Sam Mitchell played Garnett when Garnett could play last year. But yeah, Dunn plays just under 18 minutes last night, scores 2 points, 3 assists, a turnover. Tyus Jones plays 30 minutes, scores 10. He's a positive 19. He shoots 2 of 4 from the behind the three-point line. I looked it up, too, in the short time, the 19 minutes over a four-game period that Tyus has played besides Zach LaVine, Gorgui Dieng, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins, the Wolves are outscoring opponents 60-51. They're shooting 57% from the field, 72% from behind the three-point line. So the spacing is much better. The ball is moving a lot more. Tyus has never been known as a selfish player. They just seem to be in rhythm, and you get the sense that Tyus has a better understanding of how to run the offense than Chris Dunn does at this juncture, or I would imagine Dunn would be playing more.
Yeah, my whole thing with Tyus is I think he probably understands he has something to prove. I think Tibbs is always going to be inclined to like these kind of hulking players that are tough. Chris Dunn.
He's always liked small chuckers, though. Aaron Brooks, Nate Robinson in Chicago.
That's actually a very fair point. But I guess if I'm Tyus, I think players are realizing that there's a winning formula here in Minnesota and you want to be part of it. And, you know, again, this maybe is a little cliche, but I heard on the broadcast, you know, they're like, Tyus is just a winner, and that's a very simple phrase that can be misused a lot, but he does seem to have kind of, when his back's against the wall, this like natural instinct to be like, I need to do something here. I need to make something happen. And even, I'm trying to remember, I think it was in the first half, there was an instance where they just left him wide open, and they were clearly trying to just clog all his passing lanes. And again, this is how you play against Rubio, too, a little bit. But Tyus just sat there calmly, knocked down the shot, and you go, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, it's 3 points in a game where, you know, Minnesota scored that more than 100, but I like that he took that over and realized, okay, this is my time to do something, and I need to execute right here. And so there's a little bit of that intangible Tyus that I like, that he just seems to know when he has to kind of push boundaries a little bit or take over, you know, a certain part of the game, which I guess it's hard to see when he's not playing a lot, you know, early in his career.
Yeah, there was a moment, and I can't remember it vividly enough to recite what was said verbatim, but shortly after Tyus was drafted, when Flip Saunders was doing the post draft, you know, at the podium, this is before Tyus flies into town, yada, yada, yada. I can't remember what he said, so I'm pissed I even brought it up, but he scoffed at a question, and he was like, I've been watching Tyus for years. The dude knows how to win, or something to that effect. And so I think there are plenty of people out here who agree with that sentiment. Totally. You can't quantify what a winner is. You can't say, well, they have these qualities. Right. They don't have these qualities, but you know, he's always been a part of winning clubs, winning organizations. So, I mean, except for when he landed on the Timberwolves, but that is neither here nor there.
And I think that's important. You know, I look at, and again, I'm very cautious with cross-sport references, but what Theo Epstein did with the Cubs, where he tried to change a losing culture, right? And he said, you know, this, that's so Cub was, I think, one of his lines. And he tried to emphasize with these young players who could care less about the history of the Chicago Cubs that, look, because you're here, you're a winner. And Tom Thibodeau has to do that in some sense, too. There's a big difference between a 29, you know, win club and the 41-1 club or whatever he inherited in Chicago. He's one step behind because he's probably trying to get to 41, 42, 43 wins, or some people feel like 46, 47 this season, and then take that next step pretty soon, I would assume. But I think sometimes having a guy like Tyus Jones, who maybe isn't going to be that superstar player or even really a starter in the NBA, if you want weapons on your bench, they either got to be kind of niche guys like Bielitsa or something like that, or, you know, a six man like Shabazz, or you have to be a guy like Tyus Jones who in the locker room can somehow project this winning mentality he has onto this team. And I think there's something extra too, being local and A, some added pressure maybe on him, but B, that it seems like you would think a guy like that, his heart would be in, I want to be part of a winning solution in my own hometown, right? He watched this team growing up. He probably understands what...
The teams he watched, by the way, so bad. Like, because of how old he is. And
is that right?
Well, yeah. When did you start watching basketball? Like 12? It was 12 is when you really, you know, maybe...
I remember the Marbury Gugliotta Garnett Wolves.
You would have been between, what, 8 and 12?
Yeah, that's right.
So Tyus is 20.
Yeah.
Think about those teams that he probably watched.
I mean, I just think, like, I don't know. I mean, I think for a guy like him, and it's why maybe the Sixers wanted him too. Like, you know, it's these teams that probably want to install a winning mentality and want to, you know, have the talent, but need to change a culture. And so, it's going to be whether Thibodeau sees that and values that. And I mean, there's a lot of questions there, but if you have to play a significant role to be on a winning team, and the Wolves seem to be going in that direction, I don't think Tyus is the starting point guard. So what else can you offer, right? And so if he can somehow, even as a younger player, be some sort of leader,
he's a good floor spacer. He does intangible things on the basketball court too, which is important.
Yeah, and I'm glad. And so again, I think this Rubio, it works in two ways. It's helped because it shows how much the team needs him, at least right now. It's helped because it's also made Chris Dunn and Tyus Jones be better.
Yeah,
because they're forced to.
It shows Tibbs more of each of them. Totally, totally agree. Some more notes on that. Tyus with the starters lineup, if you extrapolate the numbers, because it is such a small sample, I urge caution when you take too much into account when you read these statistics, but an offensive rating of 152 points per 100 possessions. The defensive rating, though, 135. So the defense has been poor, if you're going by that metric. The assist to turnover ratio, six assists to one turnover, which is incredible. Shows you he's moving the ball well, making the right passes. And then a net rating of 16.8, so just under 17, which is pretty dang good in the small sample size we have to work with. Andrew Wiggins, Alan Horton yesterday talked to Andrew Wiggins about, you know, the Wolves being quote unquote fed up and just with everything going on. And all of a sudden yesterday, especially in the first half, things just started to click. And Wiggins, I think for, you know, he's not the most charismatic, he's not always going to give you the best answers. I think his words per answer probably ranks among the lowest in the league, if that was a thing that people calculated. But, you know, you heard some, I don't know, listen for yourself.
I kind of described it that finally you guys have kind of reached a tipping point where did you just say enough is enough and it's time to really put it all together?
Definitely. You know, we have to commit. We have to commit ourselves. We got to get all the loose balls. We got to out-rebound the other team. We got to play harder. You know, we're not winning right now. You know, we don't have a winning record, and we need to switch it around.
You know, not only did you guys have a great offensive game, but, I mean, defensively was just as good, holding them, to 45% shooting. Did you know they were going to make some runs in the second half?
Oh, yeah. You know, the game of basketball is full of runs. You know, and yes, we have to expect when the team is down, you know, it's real, it's hard. They're going to try to fight to get back in, you know, and they fought. We took their punch, and we gave them that last punch, and we won the game.
You've covered him.
Elaborate answer.
I've never. Yeah, that's a refreshingly. That's an answer. Those are legitimate answers. You don't usually get those type of answers.
He's the kind of guy, I think, when he decides to speak, he gets listened to because it's not just blather all the time, right? And again, I've always appreciated that a player that talented. I remember one of my friends is a big Kansas fan, and how excited he was for Wiggins, and how much Wiggins really delivered on that hype. A young player like that could be all talk and not be good on the basketball court. If you look at his play, you can tell he worked on his shot, right? It just looks smoother. It's going in. He's more confident kind of unleashing it at critical parts of the game. And so I think he's always going to be that guy who's more focused on what he does on the court than off of it. But I like it when he gives smart answers like that because I know then he's thinking the game. And I think that's A, really important to Tom Thibodeau, and B, really important to team success, because you're going to see less hero ball too. Because in a moment where they got to get a basket in, or they're trading baskets with the team going down the stretch, hopefully then instead of thinking, it's instinct. And so I don't know. An answer like that tells me that he's thinking the game, which I really appreciate.
Well, you mentioned that his improved shot, Andrew Wiggins, and you know, I don't want to make you fall back in your chair. Or those listening, I don't want to startle them or anything. Guess who leads the league in 3-point field goal percentage?
Mr. Wiggins.
Mr. Andrew Wiggins. It's 63%.
And his competition might be Levine, right? Levine was 7 of 9.
I didn't look, actually. Yeah. I don't have the list pulled up. I just have it in my notes. But Wiggins goes 2 of 4 last night after the 6 of 7 night in Brooklyn.
They should have won that Brooklyn game. That's a bad loss.
Yeah, it's one they'll look back on. Thibodeau said after the win over Orlando, I don't have the audio queued up, but he said the only game that they really should have lost, or that they lost handedly, was the Oklahoma City game, and I tend to agree, or I totally agree there. Every other game was winnable.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I think that's how this team, again, this is how this team's going to be. I think they're still looking to break that 500 threshold, if you will. And until they get there, they can't really focus on how they have to tinker with the team to really compete with the best in the West. The other thing you got to consider is that they have to compete against their own division, which they are probably the fourth best team in that division.
Portland,
Oklahoma City, Utah. And then I think Denver, they should have beat Denver. But Denver
should have, but didn't.
Yeah.
Denver's good. Denver was missing some key players in that game.
My hope is what happens is that they insert Rubio, and all of a sudden it's like a spark plug, and you just see like another level. Not that, again, against Orlando, I don't think Orlando's a great team, but I was surprised.
They are in disarray defensively, for sure.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's evidence that game. It would be very encouraging, I think, for fans at the very least, and kind of the Timberwolves brand, if you will, that if they literally just pounded these bad teams into dust. And it just seems like they're capable of doing that. The third quarter flaw is really perplexing, but I also, I guess I have faith that a guy like Tom Thibodeau will figure this out. If not, if he hasn't already, because they played so much better in these last two games. And I also like, I saw this in the paper. Wiggins said something where he goes, we're young. We like playing back to backs. We actually get in rhythm. I think the less this team makes excuses, the more they're going to be able to overcome this. Because, Thibodeau is so direct with his quotes. That third quarter was an abomination. We need to play better defense against Brooklyn. Even during that opening night when I was there, 48 minutes, 48 minutes, 48 minutes. He's not shying away from problems. And I think that's, I just really like that kind of coaching, that just style, that attitude. Because I think what if you do shy away from problems, what it means is you don't know how to solve them. And so there's a lot of little things here that, you know, when I talked to my friend the other day, he said he wanted to go to the Laker game that you're covering this Saturday.
It's the Clippers.
Or the Clippers, sorry. They're playing back. I think I'm covering the Laker game Sunday.
Yeah, and I did misspeak way earlier when I said the Wolves had the best net rating of any team in the first half of games.
Yeah.
It's actually the Clippers. So
oh, okay.
Two of the most...
Very interesting matchup coming up.
Potent offensive teams.
And the little Lakers, the baby Lakers are doing well, right?
Baby Showtime?
I mean, without Kobe, it seems like those guys are kind of breaking out and doing their own thing.
They're fun to watch, for sure.
Yeah, so
Julius
Julius
Randle. I know I respect and appreciate everything Gorgui Dieng has done, and
yeah.
I'm a staunch defender of the contract that he got, and obviously
of course,
Thibodeau agrees. But if you compare Julius Randle with Karl Anthony Towns, whoo,
yeah,
that would be an impressive front court for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think those are two very interesting matchups coming up this weekend. And I was talking to a friend of mine who said, you know, he's not a big basketball fan, but he wanted to go to the game. And I was, you know, he's like, is this going to be worth my money? And it wasn't too much. But I said, I really think it is. There's so much evidence beyond just like the Vegas setting that mark at 41 and this big hiring of Thibodeau and stuff. It's these little things that you can see. It's just like when a team starts too hot, right? And you can see kind of, Vikings fans probably know this a little bit. You can see the cracks, you know, the guys like our Luke Inman or whatever watching film, they can see the cracks before everyone else. I can actually see kind of the structure behind it and being like, look, I think this third quarter thing is not going to be a narrative 41 games in, or certainly 82 games, you know, after 82 games. So it's easy to look at the record and go, same old Wolves. I'm just seeing little things. And like I said, just playing that clip and stuff, I could hear it with the way Wiggins answered that question. These guys are just smarter now. You know what I mean? More educated about basketball. I hope that never changes with Tom Thibodeau, that he always addresses problems head on. I think he needs to, he's kind of a bulldog and he needs to be like that even when he's, you know, not sweating profusely running up and down the set. How far off the court, by the way, did he get in that game? Did you see that?
Last night?
Maybe that second half.
He's done it a few times.
I'm like, dude, you're going to get a six-man penalty. He's jumping out there like half court.
It's, I mean, the funniest thing is at Target Center, at least, I don't know how I haven't paid enough attention to this detail while they're on the road. Oh, the win over Orlando is the first road victory,
by the way.
Important to note. At the Target Center, they don't even set up a chair for him.
I know.
He just stands the entire time.
I know, but he's got to be careful. He can't just like run on the court like that.
Yes, he can. I mean, if Eric Spoelstra can basically jump out on the corner and defend 3-point shooters, why can't Thibodeau do?
But I love that he's himself no matter what in any setting. You assume at dinner he's probably like that ordering food or whatever. I love his direct style because I think with young players, that's how Flip was with Wiggins. And I think it's why Wiggins ends up attacking more. It's even, I noticed it with Bielitsa. Bielitsa, maybe this is going back to the Brooklyn game. I might be confusing both, but passed up a decent shot where he was kind of contested, pumped the guy. The guy passes him and goes to the basket. And it just, I think establishing that mentality that you have to take the best possible shot.
You should have shot it, right?
No, because it was defended.
Well, then I'm not giving credit for Bielitsa for making the right play, because even when he's open, he will pump and then.
Yeah, maybe that's fair.
Most notably in the Denver game.
But I like that he drove to the basket instead of pass. What I felt like he did too much last year was he'd pass on an open shot and pass the ball to a worse shot. And you're like, dude,
he did that in the Denver game at a very critical juncture, and it may or may not have, you know, there are multiple plays that you can go back and look at in the Denver game that could have swung the needle either way. But that was definitely one of them, and the one that sticks out to me.
If they polish this guy, though, you know what I mean? You know me, man. And Tibbs likes him. You can tell Tibbs likes him. But
not recently. He likes Baz at the four more recently.
Yeah, although I think that's the right move. I feel like Bielitz is more... You put him in there if you need three-point shots or ball movement. He's just got to figure out which one comes where, right? In which situation is the best move. I mean, Britt Robson on Twitter last year was the funniest thing ever. He was so fed up by the end of the year by Bielitsa passing up shots that you could just tell it was probably killing him, like, inside with his basketball instinct or whatever.
But. Yeah, speaking of Britt Robson, he has a good column up at MinPost that...
I'll have to read that.
You might want to check out, but I love his... His analysis of Zach LaVine, because he's trying so hard and he acknowledges all of the good things that Zach LaVine does, but the age gap, Britt will admittedly point to as one of the reasons he's more critical, but there are sometimes defensive lapses that go unnoticed, and especially with the highlight reel guy that LaVine is, you just overlook those defensive lapses. And he's becoming a better defensive player, and the system certainly is going to help him a lot.
He's the team's wild card. Right? He's just kind of like, you put him in for air. I mean, he's in there to create energy. Even on that one play that it was wide open, I love how he, you know, Wiggins on that play throws down like the lightest dunk you will ever see, right?
I mean, just gently lays.
It's just like who he is.
Maybe why he struggles at the rim this season or is struggling.
Yeah, but I love that LaVine just throws down a ridiculous dunk, like, because I just think you need energy like that. You probably need the yin and yang. You need a Wiggins who's more rational, probably a little bit, and not as flashy, and you need a LaVine who's gonna get the crowd going.
Just because you can't do a Wolves podcast Monday through Friday and not mention Karl Anthony Towns.
I know,
a good nugget from the Magic broadcast last night. Karl Anthony Towns entered last night's game first in the league in first quarter scoring with just under 10 points per game. He's now second to DeMar DeRozan, but mandatory/obligatory Karl Anthony Towns nugget.
It's a good thing if the first thing out of your mouth about the Timberwolves isn't Towns, because it means that other players are elevating their game, right? I mean, you look at the stats last night, LaVine 37, Wiggins 29, Towns 20. It's nice when Towns doesn't have to be your leading scorer.
I wish I knew the last time in NBA history there were three players averaging more than 20 points a game on the same team.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know a quick way to look that up, or I would do it right now.
I think LaVine having three games straight of 30 points.
The Wolves do. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns, Wiggins, and LaVine are all averaging more than 20.
Yeah. No, and LaVine set some sort of record for having three straight 30-point games or something like that. But yeah, I mean, it's just – and again, I think – Towns is a more reliable player. Wiggins is a more reliable player. But I love having LaVine as just kind of that wild card where if he's going off, it's just got to be frustrating for other teams, right? I mean, if your defense isn't good, you're going to get steamrolled. You can't just focus on two players.
I'm checking the three-point percentage, you know, just because I know Wiggins leads the league, but...
No, and they're shooting like 41% or something like that.
They lead the league in field goal percentage,
and again,
correct.
Seven games, it's a long season. But
and they don't take as many, but you can play that on another way. You can spin that another way and saying they're taking smart shots.
They're more efficient.
It's not, you know, they're not the Daryl Morey Rockets just firing threes because that's what they're supposed to do.
But, I would say that's good coaching. That's what that is.
Hey, don't slander Mike D'Antoni on this program. He is a legend, in my opinion. But, yeah, I'm just going to scrap it. I got to do a pod tomorrow, so we can save it for tomorrow.
It's cliffhanger.
Yeah, it's cliffhanger. Tune in tomorrow and
hear this stat.
Don't look anything up. That is good for today. We're at a half hour. It's easier to do this when you come. Thank you
for
joining the program, Tom Schreier. You will be back at T Schreier 3.
Yep.
TSCHR. EIER 3.
It's there.
On the Twitter. Follow Locked On Wolves at Locked On Wolves. May or may not change the handle to Locked On Timberwolves. I've done enough with the Twitter and changing, so I probably won't do it anytime soon. You can find me on Twitter at ZacharyBD. My name is Zachary Bennett. This has been the Locked On Wolves podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.